Golf Smarter, number 560, published on October 4, 2016, is brought to you by Golf Overnight. If you're about to take a vacation and you're planning to bring your golf clubs, don't have your bag slow you down through shuttle buses, airports, rental cars, and through parking lots. This trip, even if it's a business trip, just have your clubs waiting for you at your playing destination. It's so simple. So use Golf Overnight and save 20% with a checkout code GSMART. That's GSMART. Now, I want to remind you again that this is a young company and they want to help support Golf Smarter. So please give serious consideration to supporting them. Again, use the promo code GSMART. That's GSMART and save 20% at golfovernight.com. Improving your golf state of mind. Mental game training with David McKenzie.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights to lower your score and raise your golf IQ. To hear the full interview and access hundreds of Golf Smarter episodes, sign up for premium access at golfsmarter.libsyn.com. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter podcast, David.
Hi, Fred. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for joining me.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
You told me that you've listened to some of the Golf Smarter podcasts.
Yes, I have indeed. I listened to a recent interview of yours with Dr. Glenn Alba, who I'm a big fan of.
Yes. Yes, he is great. What a wonderful man he is.
Yeah, he's got a huge amount of insight, and I was lucky enough to speak, spoken to him a couple of times recently, and tremendous amount of insight, and he's really done a great job of simplifying all the golf psychology stuff and really making it in a nice digestible form. I love his book, Winning the Battle Within.
Yeah. Great book. Well, as the founder of Golf State of Mind, and your website is golfstateofmind.com, you offer alternative golf coaching. Let's talk about what that means.
Alternative golf coaching is everything that is necessary to become a good player that most golfers do not try or do. And I know because I was there myself, and I tried everything traditional there was out there to get better, and everything that the golf industry tells you is going to make you a better player. That's taking lots of lessons, reading the golf magazines, taking those tips with you to the golf course, buying the latest clubs, and that wore me down and didn't get me anywhere. And so I knew that there was something. I knew that I was a better player than my scores were reflecting, and I tried pretty much everything in what I considered to be the traditional ways to improve or to get to my full potential. And so I took a deep delve into the mental game of golf, the psychology of golf, the emotional side of the game, and it was that enabled me to go from a pretty average player who knew he had a good game, a much better game inside him, to where I am now, which is regularly shooting scratch golf.
Where were you before you started this transition into it? When you said to yourself, "I know I'm better than this," what was your handicap around then?
I was sort of a low 80s shooter, so I was like an 11, 12 handicap. Loved the game, was obsessed with the game, and just spent lots of hours, lots of money, trying to get to the level I am now. And I went about it in completely the wrong way. And, when I started Golf State of Mind, it was, look, there's an easier and more effective way to do this. Save yourself a lot of time, save yourself a lot of money, and rethink the way that you're going about trying to improve.
Is it a lot harder to get from being an 18 handicap down to a 10 or 11 than it is going from an 11 down to scratch? Which one do you think is more difficult?
I think the last few shots are the hardest to take off. I mean, I think going from 18 to 11, you know, should be, there's no reason why, you know, most 18 handicappers, if they apply themselves in the right way, even with, you know, just being able to play once a week and have a you know, three hours of practice, if they can, per week, there's no reason why they can't get down to 11 pretty comfortably. But I would say the 11, you know, the 11 down to the single figures would be a little bit harder and requires, you know, a little extra attention to the, you know, the emotional side and how to practice with, you know, with playing with the senses. And it becomes, I think the better you become and the closer you get to scratch, the more mental a game it becomes.
Really? It's not just skill level at that point? If you were an 11 before you even got started with this, you had the tools.
I've got the tools. I think most golfers have the tools. They just don't know it. I mean, I think that once you've perfected the fundamentals and once, you know, you've got a solid grip, solid posture, alignment, ball position, stance, once you've got those things down, and I would advise all your listeners to make sure that they continually practice that. I mean, when you go to those people at the PGA Tour events, you're seeing the guys working on their alignment, working on their posture, their grip. They continue to do that. That's just a necessity in the game. Once you have those fundamentals, I don't see why any golfer couldn't get that, you know, from 18 to 11, as you say, because most of them have that ability, then the athletic ability, but it's the fixation on the swing, that, you know, how they look, the all the emotional stuff. I mean, you know, when you think about a game of golf, it's you're actually playing the game for about, I think, like 5 minutes of the four hours that you have on the golf course.
Right.
So it's if, you know, if you think about it in that respect, and you think about that, you know, 3 hours and 55 minutes that you're not playing, and how you manage your game during that time, that's where you're gonna be able to pick up a lot of shots. What you do before a shot, what you do after a shot, what you do when you're walking between holes, you know, how much you're focusing on your score, how much you're focusing on, you know, a bad shot you just hit. I mean, it's all those things that there is a system and a way to manage that part of the game. And that's what the guys, you know, on the tour, they have systems, they have processes to be able to deal with that, the emotional side of the game. But to answer your question, the better, you know, the lower the handicap, the more a mental game. All the guys on the tour have the ability to go out and shoot in the mid-60s. But it's the, you know, it's the mental management that differs, and that's why some of them play great on some days and not so great on others.
And have you been coaching for most of your career? Have you been involved in coaching golf, or were you just starting out as being a guy who, like all of us, is obsessed with the game and think about it and stop in front of mirrors and start working on your swing and gave that all up to become a coach? How did you get to that spot where you felt you had enough of the tools to be able to coach others?
Yeah, it was all through my own experience of playing the game that I, you know, that I was able to create, you know, my system. But it started off, it was an evolution from just blogging about, you know, I realized that there was, you know, I discovered the game of golf was easier than I thought it was, and you can get so much more out of it than chasing score and you know, how good your swing is. You know, there's lots of life lessons and things like that, and so I just reshifted my focus on the game, and it was just an amazing transformation. And at that point, I started blogging about it. You know, I started Golf State of Mind, and people started getting interested, because at the time I started Golf State of Mind, there wasn't a whole lot out there on the mental game, and it was still kind of something that people thought of as, you know, oh, you know, it's a bit hokey, I guess. And And people, it resonated with people. And so I started buying more, and I started buying more. Through my experiences and the interaction with the readers of the website, what they, and understanding more about what they struggled with, I was able to, in a sense, essentially coach myself on how to coach. And now I've got to this point where, I've got a pretty in-depth knowledge of this area of the game. And, I've developed, through a little time trial and error, I've refined my system to the point where it's just very comprehensive and can in a short period of time can take a golfer to a better level of scoring.
Well, you mentioned Dr. Glenn Alba. Who were your influences that got you to that allowed you to start developing your own methods?
Yeah, Tim Galway's book, The Inner Game of Golf, which I think was written in the 70s. I picked that up, when I first started playing the game, and that was when I guess the seed was sown, in that I knew that golf was a mental game, even though I got completely sidetracked with everything else, the golf industry was telling me I should be doing to become a better player. So his book, I still have his book and I still pick it up every now and again and read it. And then Extraordinary Golf, Fred Shoemaker, that was when I started to, he talks about, being aware of your swing and aware of shot shapes and just really kind of like playing sensory golf. And that's, that's always stuck with me, playing with your senses and not playing with, there's no conscious control of your body when you're swinging. You're seeing, you're feeling, and that's it. And you go with that. So his book was definitely one that I love. And Joseph Perrin's book, the Zen Golf as well. That's another really, really good book on the spiritual side of the game.
Yeah, classics. Fred Shoemaker was on a couple months ago. Dr. Joe Parent's been on many times. But Galway, didn't he start with like the inner game of tennis? Wasn't that his first one?
Yeah, he did. He did. And some of the principles, are similar. Albeit tennis is obviously a reactionary game, and a moving ball versus a stationary ball, but he talks about, I remember one being like, the back hit exercise. And he talks about, having using that with the tennis swing. And I still make that recommendation to students of mine about, back hit or 1-2, or, counting something on your backswing. So you're not focusing on what your body or your swing is doing.
Well, I want to get into a couple of things you said. First of all, that the counting, and I want to expand on that. But then when you talked about getting sidetracked, when you were focused on all the things that the golf industry was telling you, I want to know what you meant by sidetracked. But if you don't mind, I want to break here for a commercial, because this episode of the Golf Smarter podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Audible would like to provide the Golf Smarter listener an opportunity to try the first book for free. Go free for a month. When you sign up, you sign up for a year, but check out that first month for free. Check out an audiobook. You don't like it, cancel it, but the first one's going to be free. David, are you a book reader or an audiobook listener?
I am. I actually do prefer audio to reading books. And
really?
And that's something I'm trying to do with my own website, is convert as many of these articles into audio as well. But yeah, I'm familiar with audible.com and have downloaded a few books from there.
And why do you prefer audiobooks over reading?
Because it's just easy. I can listen to it on the train or in the car, you're usually moving from one place to another, and it's great to fill that time that you're which would otherwise just be time.
Yeah.
Time.
Yeah. So is there anything that you've read recently or that you just truly loved in audio that you'd like to recommend to us?
Yes, I recently read Josh Kaufman's Personal MBA. Listen to it. And that's a fantastic read. I mean, it's a good book for entrepreneurs and anyone who's considering doing an MBA. There's a lot of great stuff in this book that is just as valuable or all the good stuff that you can in an MBA course that you would and you can get it in an audiobook.
Awesome. Awesome. So that's The Personal MBA, Master the Art of Business, written by and narrated by Josh Kaufman. Did he do a good job narrating?
Yeah, he does. Yeah,
good.
He's got a nice voice.
Well,
yeah.
it's a 13 and a half hour book, so it's one of the great ones to get. If you're interested in that topic, it's a great one to have as your first one for free, because they'll probably charge a lot more for it, but getting it for free is a great idea. But you can get whatever you want. Their library is enormous. 150,000 titles. So choose it. Check it out. Go to audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. AUDIBLE. audiblepodcast.com/golfsmarter. And check out all the titles to see if there's something that interests you, and then download that first one for free. All right. And we thank them very much for their support of the Golf Smarter podcast. Okay. Now, David, I'm real curious. When you said you got sidetracked by all the noise that you were getting from golf professionals and instruction and magazines and TV, what does that mean, getting sidetracked?
It's unfortunate that the golf industry tells us. I mean, it makes money out of telling us that we need to go buy new equipment. We need the latest driver. We all need to play the, Pro V1 golf balls. We all need to play. And also, we should go and take more lessons, and we should go and, buy, more, golf magazines and read all these, the quick tips and things like that. So it's kind of, I think that the golf industry is biased towards those things that are going to make it money. And most of us, myself included, fall into that trap of thinking that you can buy your way to a better golf game. Hmm. When in actual fact, you already possess it. You already possess a better golf game, and you just need to know the right way to get it out. I mean, when you look at it like this, in the last 30 years, the average handicap of 16 hasn't fallen. And you think about how much farther the drivers go. I mean, we must be talking an average of, 30, 40 yards per drive. Think about how much more controllable the balls are, the Pro V1, the long off the tee and soft around the greens. It's quite unbelievable that, when you think about those numbers alone, that tells you quite a lot.
I loved when you said earlier, I knew I was better than my scores. I think every golfer probably goes through that. I know that I do. How do we get past the blocks that don't allow us? I don't know if it's don't allow us, but make it so difficult to get consistently better. Because it just doesn't seem, people just kind of get into a spot and I shoot, and you shoot within those 10 strokes every time, and everything balances itself out and brings you right back into that same slot.
Yeah, and I think that it's acknowledging those things that are gonna hurt your game. Those emotional things that we all do without really thinking about it. On the drive to the course, thinking to yourself, I think I'm going to shoot my best round today. Immediately, that's putting pressure on yourself. That's creating expectation. And I think that's. That's part of it. Is when you're practicing. For a start, I think a lot of golfers don't practice in the way that they should, and that you should try and create a similar experience to the course when you practice. So instead of just every shot should have a consequence on the when you practice, just as it does on the golf course. And so just acknowledging certain things. Like even the preparation for the round and not setting yourself up to go out there and shoot a good score, and acknowledging that a good round of golf is a collection of individual shots hit as best you can. Like, you can't control what happened in the past. You can't control, what's going to happen. And just acknowledging that, most of it is out of your control. Really, the only thing that you can do is stick to a process, acknowledge the negative emotions that are going to prevent you from becoming a better player. So when these things enter in your head, you can choose to hang on to them and let those emotions, like, negatively affect your body and raise your heart rate and, make you feel tense. So it's understanding what those things are that are going to change your mindset from, being carefree, playing calm, playing to your natural ability versus, hanging on to the wrong things and trying to force that good score. You can't try hard in golf. You have to give up control to gain control. And so I think that's one of the fundamentals of the mental game.
Mm. It's not as easy as it sounds. You make it sound so easy.
Yeah, and it's not. It's like everything. It's like going to the driving range and trying to make sure you're getting your positions right and your angles right on the swing, and just as everyone does those kinds of things regularly, these are things that come with practice. It's not something that you can't read a book. You can't read a book and then go to the golf course and think, I know everything about the mental game now. I'm just going to manage my game perfectly from the first hole to the 18th green. It takes practice and it takes discipline, but it's very, very achievable. And I know from my own experience and from the players that I've worked with that doing this and spending a good portion of your practice time understanding these fundamentals and the way that and how to manage emotions, how to prepare for a shot. It sounds like a lot. It sounds like a lot. But the more you do it, the more instinctive it becomes, the more habitual it becomes, and before you know it, the game becomes a lot easier.
Does it get more fun when it gets easier,
or do you get
more obsessed when you get better?
I think that you think about it in a different way. I mean, I want my players to go out on the golf course. The amateur players that I work with, especially, I mean, everyone should be having fun on the golf course. I mean, why wouldn't you have fun? I mean, you're spending $50 to $100 on a green fee. You're spending, probably like 6 hours total when you factor in the travel time and everything. You're away from, your family or whatever you could be doing instead of playing golf. So why not make that, the objective? Hmm. I want my players to focus on routine. That being a major goal for the round is routine. We're not going to make score a goal, and focusing on process instead of outcome is going to get you closer to those results than any kind of focus on score. So I think that you kind of pressure gets taken away when you think about the game in a different way. When you think about, I'm going to go out there and have fun. I'm not going to let this game get to me. And if it does get to me, I have an opportunity to be able to overcome that adversity and the challenge that the game has, because without those shots that we don't like, without those, those offline shots that go into the rough, without those, the game would not be as fun. It's the challenge that we all love and we all keep coming back for.
Yeah.
If we were able to hit the ball straight down the middle and straight onto the green, it would quickly become boring.
You talked about practicing and going to the range, but you were referring to practicing the mental game, not just working on your swing mechanics. Is that right?
Yes. I'm not discounting swing coaches and the need for swing coaching. I think that that's, that is an element of the game that, people, that players need to work on. But for me, the more you can you can synchronize your body and your mind through visualization, through feel, and ingraining those feelings and just becoming aware of your body. So I wouldn't, for example, an example of a bad practice session for me would be to stand on the driving range, one target, a bucket of balls, perhaps a couple of clubs, and just hitting straight to that same target. That's not, to me, that's not effective practice.
Why?
Effective practice. Because that's nothing like you would be, that's nothing like it would be on the golf course. On the golf course, you're changing shots all the time, and you're having to play different kinds of shots. So my idea for fulfilling an effective practice session on the driving range would be to hit no more than three balls with the same club. I'd be picking different targets. I'd be trying to hit different trajectories, moving the ball around in my stance, hitting different trajectories. I would try to hit as many different kinds of shots as I could. I would even try to hit, a slice, a hook, a draw. I've got a practice drill on the website called the Nine Shots, where, you're playing a fade and a draw and a straight shot with three different trajectories. And so you end up with nine shots. So it's that variety. Otherwise, you just get into range rhythm. I think it's very, very easy to think that you've mastered the game on the driving range. And that's why a lot of golfers say, I wish I could take my driving range game to the golf course. And there's so many things that are wrong with what they're doing on the driving range that, they wouldn't want to take that game to the golf course.
No, we don't. But like, if you go to the driving range and you'll see, let's just say there's 25 people out there. And you just kind of stand back and watch for a while. I can almost bet that 99% of those guys are hitting one club over and over and over again. Why is it that just seems the way you're supposed to do it? And what's really interesting, especially if you're warming up for a round, I'm guilty of this myself, going, okay, that was a shot I wanted. I don't want to do that again. I mean, as soon as you get one that you like, it's like, okay, I can move on now.
Yeah. If I'm understanding the question.
I don't even know if I asked one, did I? I realized it was this long pause. I'm like, did I ask him anything? Sorry.
No, I think I know what, I know what you mean. Yeah, you hit one club, one shot, one club, and, because you're working on a swing drill, right. You're trying to ingrain that swing into your muscle memory. And that's how a lot of golfers spend a lot of their time. And it's just, to me, it's not effective. And I've been there, and I used to throw $8 down for a bucket of balls, bucket of ball after bucket of balls, and make those same mistakes over and over again. Mm. Now I practice in a completely different way. It's about imagining holes. It's about trying to create pressure on myself, playing games. I think that games should be a big part of practice. And I actually have a book on practice drills, which is designed for that purpose, to create scores. Even on the driving range, you can play games with yourself to try and create the same kind of pressure. Not get into that habit of just, you hit one ball. Oh, didn't like that shot. I'll hit, I've got another one here. Just pull it out of the basket. It's about every shot, should have a purpose and a consequence.
Give me an example of what you mean by these games that you play while you're on the range.
I would be visualizing holes in my mind. And so you could, essentially play holes and, imagine, Ben Hogan used to talk about this, like playing holes in his mind. So you can actually play against yourself on the driving range and imagine that you're in a certain situation. Imagine that you're on the golf course, I heard about Graham McDowell, like running on the spot, like on the driving range to try and get his heart rate up. Not that I can imagine many listeners are going to want to do that on a packed driving range, but the point is that you know, he's trying to simulate that feeling on the golf course, being under pressure,
being amped,
feeling
up.
That. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it's that most golfers just practice thinking that, you know, there's always that next ball, and that's not the mentality that we're trying to practice. Because I think, you know, practicing is an opportunity to practice your mental game, just as it is your physical game. And I think that gets missed. Mm. But yeah, so I've got a number of different games in my practice drills book where, you know, you're playing games and getting scores. So every shot has a meaning.
You know, I would think that if people had a better sense, if golfers had a better sense of strategy or what they like to call course management, I think that everybody out on the fairways and at the tee box would be better golfers. They would cut down some strokes. But getting onto the putting green, to me, is where the mental game seems to have the most powerful impact. You wrote a piece called the five most common putting mistakes. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, I can. I don't have that article in front of me, but I'll try.
Come on,
yeah,
you wrote it. You know what it is.
Yeah, well, the closer you get to the hole, you know, the closer you get to your score. So that's where we feel pressure. I mean, it's the you know, it's the easiest shot to play. I mean, it's easier than any other shot that you're faced with on the golf course. But yeah, it's where we make the most. It seems like it's where we make the most mistakes.
Oh yeah. And feel the most pressure, I would think.
Yeah, it's where we feel the most pressure, and it's where we need to have, you know, where we need to have a lot of discipline, where we need to, you know, make sure that the process is good, make sure that breathing is good, and, you know, not thinking about the consequences of, you know, of the putt and the score and what it might do for you. And these are things that, you know, with the right techniques, the right, you know, knowing how to switch off and not think about score and focusing on process, because process is just one of those things that you know you can rely on in any situations. That's always going to help you calm down. And if you've got a good putting process, That's really going to help you. And that's the, you know, Jack Nicklaus said that he never missed a putt in his mind. And, you know, I like the, you know, I think that's a good way to think about it, because if you know that you've gone through your process, you've visualized, you've felt the putt, you've seen it, you've done everything you can, you possibly can, you've read, given the putt a good read, and you've gone through your process, that's all you can do. The rest is out of your control. And another thing that's important in the mental game is self-talk and phrases that you can include in your game. So when you're standing over a, you know, 10, 15 foot putt, ask yourself a question: is this possible? And by asking yourself that question, and, you know, your response should be, yeah, it is possible. Instead of, you know, I've got to make this, you know, I'm going to make this. It's, you know, you take pressure off yourself. You're not expecting to make anything. You're expecting to go through your process as well as you can. And when you think that, you know, even on the PGA Tour, they're missing 50% of putts over about 5 feet. You know, it's there really shouldn't be any pressure. The best thing you can do is just go through your routine.
Yeah, but, you know, I know that. If I were to ask myself, is this possible? The answer is always, of course it's possible. Is it probable that I'm going to make it? That's when doubt enters the conversation in my head. But if I walk up to a putt and, you know, and I'm looking at the putt as I'm walking towards the green, I'm going, I got this one. I know I got this one. This one, I walk in with total confidence, instead of questioning myself. I feel more comfortable, but then when I'm standing over the ball, the doubt enters and I start questioning, do you really got this one? It's a very thin line you're walking between asking yourself, can I do this, versus telling yourself, I can do this. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the intention is to make every shot. I'd say within 50 yards, I think the intention should be to make every shot. The closer, the more positive and the more precise your visualization for the shot, the closer you're going to get to the target. So I would always say that the intention is to make the shot. But I think that I don't think there's any harm in sort of pre-accepting, you know, a miss. You know, the worst thing you can do is to, you know, say, you know, I'm going to make this. Not the worst thing, but it doesn't help you to say, I'm going to make this, because you're setting that expectation that if you don't make that putt, then you failed. So I think the intention through your routine, the intention is to make every putt. You're seeing it go in. I mean, you're even being as detailed as to see, you know, where on the hole the ball is going to fall in. But I think that those, you know, building in a bit of acceptance into your routine so that you don't disappoint yourself when you do miss, can help steady the ship.
Excellent advice. In your putting mistakes article, I'm curious why you say it's a mistake to... Are you saying it's a mistake to not find out whether you're a straight back, straight through putter or an arc putter? Or are you saying it is a mistake to worry about that?
I would say, I mean, this is it's more of a technical thing, actually. But everyone has, you know, some players take it straight back, straight through, and some putt, you know, with the putter going on an arc. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure you have the right equipment for that. You know, there's a, you know, face balance putter and a, you know, heel or toe weighted putter. So if you're a straight back, straight through, you want to have a face balance putter and know what the difference is, because that can affect your stroke.
Can you explain face balance putter for those who don't know?
So a face balance putter is when there's equal weight across the face of the putter, and you can test this out by holding the putter, a few inches from the from the head of the putter on the shaft, and you can see how the putter is balanced, whether it's balanced in the toe or the heel, or it just lies flat.
So if you are a straight back, straight through, then you do want face balanced.
You want a face balanced putter, yeah.
Okay, and if your stroke is on an arc around, like, and that arc is like around your body, not the arc of a full swing. That arc, you want to have a heel weighted putter. Why is that?
That's a technical question.
Okay.
But it's just to do with the movement that the putter's naturally going to take when it gets, you know, if you were to take it back on a pendulum.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have thought that if you're taking it straight back and you've got a heel weighted putter, you're going to be kind of like fighting against the putter's natural movement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then getting too technical is what you think is also a very big issue for most people, is they spend too much time forcing that. Is that what you mean by being too technical?
Yeah, I do. I think that putting, you know, as we just discussed, putting is probably the most mental part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it should, for me, it's an art, not a science. And I think that, you know, even with, you know, I could use one of those old bullseye putters and play just as well as, you know, using one of the, you know, the most recent super duper putters, because for me, it's all about, you know, how well I visualized the line, how well I felt it, and really got into the putt itself instead of anything to do with my stroke. I think that same with the long game. If you've got strong fundamentals and you know you're setting up consistently to every putt, and you know, I mean, alignment is absolutely key, and that's another one of the mistakes is that, you know, you can have a, great visualization and great feel and great green reading, but if you don't actually put the putter face down in line with where you want the ball to start, then you're not going to, you know, you're going to miss the putt. So good fundamentals and then really good alignment and making sure that your alignment is absolutely spot on.
And if anybody wants to contact David, you can do so. Just go to his website. And again, you can get his free newsletter. And he's got a lot of goodies he's given away. But if you want to spend more time with him, I'm sure he's not giving that away. But you can check it out. David McKenzie, thank you so much for coming on to the Golf Smarter podcast and sharing your methods and your teachings.
Thank you very much, Fred. I love talking about this stuff. This is my passion. I've been a big fan of your Golf Smarter podcast for a long time now, and it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Now, to keep it short today, just ask that question one more time. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.